Good afternoon. Welcome on into Kildare Focus. You're listening to KFM. It is Tuesday, the 31st of January. Coming up on today's show, we'll be speaking to Geraldine Herbert, motoring editor of the Sunday Independent. 70% of consumers in Ireland are considering an electric vehicle as their next car purchase. That's according to a new survey that was carried out by Done Deal. Then we'll be speaking to Duncan Kenna. He's an owner of Occasions Hair Salon in Naas and Maynooth. Hairdressers launch a campaign against the VAT rate for hairdressing being increased from 9% to 13.5%. Then we'll speak to Eugene Drennan, president of the Irish Road Haulage Association. A record of €170 million was collected on the M50 tolls last year. And then we'll be going south of the county to Breed Brophy. She's from Athy Community Arts Centre, and she'll be telling us all about the upcoming events for St. Bridget's Day that are happening down there. So if you want to get in touch with the show, 0833 97 97 97 045 898 999 if you want to call us, or you can email studio@kfmradio.com.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, 70% of consumers in Ireland are considering an electric vehicle as their next car purchase. That's according to a new survey that was carried out by Done Deal. And I'm joined on the line now by Geraldine Herbert. She is a motoring editor of the Sunday Independent. Good afternoon, Geraldine.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe.
This is great news, I suppose, Geraldine, isn't it?
It is. I suppose it's not surprising. There's huge interest in electric cars at the moment, and I think that's from all sorts of reasons. I think the fuel costs going up last year made people who never thought about buying an electric car think twice. And I also think that probably the announcement by the government that they're going to invest €100 million in the EV charging network is also making people consider, you know, that an electric car might be more viable. So I think there's lots of reasons. And I think as we get closer to 2030, I mean, obviously with every year we do, and people are thinking, if I buy a car now and I go to trade it up in 2023 or 2027 or 2028, we're getting closer to that deadline. So I think it's just, you know, it's focusing the mind of buyers more on electric cars than before.
Yeah, the figures show that the demand on the website for new and used electric vehicles grew by 33% last year, while demand for diesel cars fell by 39% during the same period. I suppose it's not surprising, and I'm looking at the survey here. It says the Volkswagen ID4, of course, an electric car, is the most popular car in demand, I suppose, last year. Not surprising, there's a lot of them on the road, isn't there, Geraldine?
There's a huge number, and actually the Volkswagen ID4 was one of the five top-selling cars in Ireland last year, not just the best-selling EV, but actually, you know, one of the top five. So that'll just show you the number of them on the road. And it's only when you're stopped in the traffic lights, you're actually beginning to see lots of EVs everywhere. So we're not quite at that tipping point where people know lots of people who drive them, but we're definitely getting there.
Yeah, it's great news. Look, for anyone who's, I suppose, trying to be more climate conscious. I suppose the only thing that people will always say, and we hear it all the time here, Geraldine, is that the infrastructure isn't there. And I suppose, like, going forward, of course, we have the new news that there's going to be electric chargers put into sports centres and different community centres around the country. But until then, what do you think will happen in regards to electric cars?
Yeah, the problem is, there's no doubt about it, the infrastructure is putting people off buying an electric car because they hear these scare stories and horror stories about people who went on a 2-hour journey that took 8 hours or 6 hours or whatever because it was just so difficult to charge. And definitely there are areas in the country that are fine and have lots of fast chargers, but there are other places that, you know, it's very patchy throughout. There are places that are just really badly served. So I think the problem is, we need to get away, I suppose, from the mindset of the fact that we need a kind of filling station network of electric chargers. What we really need are chargers everywhere. So we need the high-speed ones on the motorways, so when we're doing those long journeys, we can top up very quickly. But also, we need even the standard chargers that take a couple of hours. They'd be ideal in the cinema or in a restaurant, or if you're staying overnight in a hotel, or if you're in your workplace for the day. So, you know, what we need really is this idea that we're constantly topping up, like we're topping up our mobile phone, rather than going from zero to full. So I think that is the kind of network we need to replicate. And when we have that, I think people will feel far more confident about the idea of, you know, buying an electric car.
What advice would you give to anyone out there now? I suppose we're at the start of a new year. People might be considering purchasing a new motor. What advice would you give?
I have to say, when it comes to electric cars, I always say if you have the facility to put in a home charger, then great. But if you don't, I would be very wary, for the simple reason that if you have a home charger, not only is it more convenient and you know at all times that you can charge your car, but also it's an awful lot cheaper. You can go on a night race and it really, really makes the difference then. And, you know, there's a huge savings to be made. The problem at the moment is if you're relying on the public charging network, it depends on where you live, how well your area is served, whether or not you've charging in work, but you're also going to pay an awful lot more. The ESB public charging network went up, the cost went up by 50% on the 20th of December, and that was actually the second increase last year. So they've gone up quite considerably, and that gap between, you know, the cost of running a petrol and diesel car versus an EV is beginning to narrow. There's still savings to be made if you're on the public charging network, but certainly not as much as there was beforehand, and not nearly as much as you'll make at home.
Okay, and I'm looking at some of the figures here. So there's only currently 1,350 EV charging points on this island, operated and maintained by the ESB. But in contrast, Norway currently has 17,000 charging stations across their country with a population of just over 5.5 million euros, people. So fairly on par with us there. So we have a long way to go, Geraldine, don't we?
We do indeed. Now, there's probably close to 2,000 in Ireland if you bring in all of the various different providers. That's just the ESB figure. But even at that, we still fall down. But as I said, it's not even so much a numbers game. It's where those chargers are, what sort of chargers there are. And really what we need is those fast chargers at motorway points. And that really is the big thing. And then, you know, we can do with the slower ones or whatever. But the problem is, at the moment, of that 1,350 that are maintained and operated by the ESB, the vast majority of them are the slow ones, which will take a couple of hours. And people don't want and don't have the time for a couple of hours to be charging their car, not when they're on long journeys.
Yeah, and look, I suppose people still have a huge kind of psychological thing in their head about range anxiety and, you know, are they going to be able to get there? And that's really the thing that persists for most people and the block that's there for people not to buy it, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And the thing about it is as well, as we move towards sort of a more mature market and people are buying second-hand EVs, if you're buying a second-hand EV, you know, there might only be 200, 250 kilometres on it because that's all the battery did at the time. You know, the technology's moving so rapidly. We now have new cars that do 400 or 500 kilometres on a single charge, but a car 3-4 years old, you know, the best it probably did when it was brand new was maybe 250. And if that's the case, then you're going to be much more reliant on the public charging network than somebody who has 400 or 500 kilometres of charge. So therefore, you know, those people need to be reassured that they're not going to be left stranded. And what they need is, you know, they need to see a reliable, nationwide, convenient network that they know exactly where their nearest charging points are. And if they are going on an unfamiliar route, that it's very easy for them to find where they can charge it, and they're not going to get there and there's somebody else, you know, taking up the charging post at the time or whatever. So, I mean, they do need that reassurance.
Yeah, I have a message in here, Geraldine. This man says, Jim in Selbridge, I was going to buy an electric car. The salesman told me if the battery went, it could cost €10,000. Is that common? Is that the price of a charger to replace it on an electric vehicle?
Okay, there's a few things to bear in mind there. First of all, if you're buying a second-hand electric car, you can get the battery checked and they will be able to tell you how much life is left in it. The second thing is it's quite rare to replace an entire battery. They're actually made up of component parts like modules that can be, so parts of them can be repaired rather than completely replaced. Also, they can be replaced with a second-hand battery, but that's still, you know, it might have been in a car that had a crash, but the battery could be perfect and it could be slotted in and that would be considerably cheaper. But if you were in a situation where you had to replace the battery completely, depending on the maker model, it could cost you anywhere between 10,000 and 15,000. But as I said, it's very rare. And we do hear of engines blowing up as well and having to be replaced. So, you know, these are kind of margin cases.
Okay, so you're saying it wouldn't be a common thing that the battery would have to be replaced like every couple of years?
No, they last a very long time. And I think what's very reassuring for people as well is that most car manufacturers give, I think it's an 8-year warranty on batteries or up to 160,000 kilometres. Now, that's far more than they guarantee petrol and diesel cars. And remember, the average age of a car on Irish roads at the moment is about 9 years. So if you were driving a 9-year-old EV, you know, your battery would have been under warranty for 8 years of that.
Okay. I suppose another maybe barrier is that there aren't as many second-hand cars coming onto the market for people who, you know, I myself say I've never bought a brand new car, and most people probably are like that. But I suppose over the next few years you might see more coming on stream, will we, Geraldine?
You will indeed, but the problem is, I suppose, there's currently about 68,000 EVs that have been sold, and the vast majority of those have been sold, say, in the last 2, maybe 3 years. So they're only filtering onto the second-hand market now. The other thing as well is Brexit. Before Brexit, obviously, the second-hand, the used cars from the UK were a great source of second-hand cars for Ireland. But now, with Brexit, they're much less attractive to bring in. So they aren't filtering into the market either. So we're solely dependent on new EVs to be sold and then come onto the second-hand market. So it is going to take its time. Like, even last year, the sales were up, but there was still only about, say, 15,500 EVs sold. The year before, there was half that, maybe 8,000 sold. So, you know, we're not, I suppose, buying them in huge numbers. That really is going to make a difference. And then people might be holding on to them longer than they would maybe a petrol or diesel car. So, you know, it's all taking its time to build up a decent second-hand market.
There's a change to the grant for the EV cars now, Geraldine, isn't that correct?
Well, there's talk of changing the grant in July.
Okay.
So currently there's an SEAI grant of €5,000 on cars that are under 60,000. So what it looks like they're going to do, they did this with the plug-in hybrids 2 years ago. They cut it from 5,000 to 2,500 and then it was completely gone the following year. So if they do the same thing, that's what I'd expect them to do in July. Now, I hope they don't, because I think it's far too premature and I think it would be counterproductive. But it looks likely that they will have that grant.
Yeah, and look, 60,000 is still a huge amount of money for someone, even with the €5,000 grant, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, remember as well, that is on cars that are, you know, 30,000 and 35,000. So it's a big chunk off that price. So
okay.
If suddenly, you know, they go up by 2,500, that's a lot of money and it will definitely impact on sales.
Okay, well, that's Geraldine Herbert there, motoring editor with the Sunday Independent, with that news that 70% of consumers in Ireland are considering an electric vehicle as their next car purchase. That's according to a new survey done by Dundeal, and there's the top 10 new cars on Dundeal by demand in 2022 were number one, the Volkswagen ID4, and that's electric vehicle. It's the first time ever an electric car was the most in demand new car on Dundeal last year. Then second, Audi A6 diesel, no surprise there, the Audis. Hyundai Tucson hybrid, that was third. The Kia Sportage was fourth, that's diesel. The Hyundai Ioniq 5 electric, and then Skoda Kodiaq, I think it's diesel, Audi A4 diesel, Volkswagen Tego petrol, Volkswagen Polo petrol, and Volkswagen petrol as well. The top 10 cars there, and Volkswagen taking up a good chunk of it there. It is, of course, the 31st of January. Many people will have been doing dry January, and tomorrow, I suppose, is the last day. Tomorrow, maybe some people might enjoy a little tipple, and dry January has become increasingly popular in recent years. Many people taking part this month, and latest data proves that Irish people are continuing to embrace non-alcoholic beer and other no or low alcohol alternatives. I have to say, I think I'd just rather not drink than drink the low alcohol. I have tried a couple of the 0.0 beers and that kind of thing, but it just doesn't do it for me. I think I'd just rather not drink at all. But let me know if you have been doing dry January, and are you going to go back on it hard tomorrow, or are you going to try and stick with it for a little while? I didn't try and do it myself now. I did the moderation for January. So that's my little 2 cents there. Coming up after the break, Duncan Kenna, owner of Occasions Hair Salon in Naas and Maynooth.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, I have a text in here, and this man doesn't want his name read out, but he says he does love the show, so thank you very much. He says, "Hi, I drink Guinness Zero in the pub and I love it. As somebody who has a strange relationship with alcohol, I'm delighted to purchase zero beer in the pub." And yeah, a lot of people do, and I think, in fairness, like, if you're drinking Guinness Zero, you can't really tell that the person isn't drinking. And I think that's one of the big things in Ireland. I know, especially in my friend group, like if I went out and said I wasn't drinking for the night, like genuine, it is, it's a terrible way to be. But the girls would probably think that I was pregnant, you know, like straight off the bat, they'd be like, oh, sure, she must be pregnant. Why isn't she drinking tonight? And it is a thing that kind of goes with it in Ireland. Or if a man goes out, I'm sure there's different reasons. They might be saying, oh, sure, he's sick there or something like that, because it's not really as acceptable to just say, look, I don't want to drink. But I think the Guinness Zero and the different types of 0.0 drinks, I know Heineken have one as well, loads of different ones, they give people the opportunity to maybe go out and not drink, but it doesn't appear that they're not drinking. So look, there's something out there for everyone. Now we're moving tack a little bit over to hairdressing, because today the Irish Hairdressers Federation has launched a nationwide campaign to keep the VAT rate for hairdressing sector at 9% ahead of the government's plans to raise it to 13.5% on the 1st of March. And I'm joined now by a local salon owner, Duncan Kenna, and he owns Occasions Hair Salon in Naas and in Maynooth. Good afternoon, Duncan.
Good afternoon, Cuíva. Thanks for inviting me onto the show.
Of course, Duncan. I suppose, look, straight off, what do you think about this?
Well, I'll tell you what I think about it. 13.5% is just a deal breaker now, because people are going out of business as we speak, and it's been happening for the last couple of years. So to put this is going to finish us off completely. Right. I know businesses in Naas and Maynooth that have closed down, and it's just something would have to be done about it, because we're not playing with a level playing pitch here. We're in a business where we're in the service industry. That means standing beside a client for between 45 minutes and probably 4 hours. We don't stand at the front desk popping things into a bag. This is the service industry that we're in. And it really just has to be not only kept at 9%, I would see it that it should be reduced to 5%. In Denmark, it's 6% for the VAT. And it's just, it will be the straw that broke the camel's back. Now, for me, I'm not crying wolf here, because I'm probably at the later stage in hairdressing. I'm at a 33 years in hairdressing, 47 or 8 years. But what irks me about the whole thing, Cuíva, thanks again for giving me this opportunity, every time we put up prices in our salon, we lose jobs and we lose customers. And them jobs, they don't find other jobs in the hairdressing industry. You know, so must remember, some of these people in hairdressing and girls in particular, they dreamt about being hairdressers for years and years and years, and then it's just not the business that they fell into it. And they're only in it a while, and they're getting let go because prices are going up all over the place. So this can't, it can't go on. When you lose a job like that, it goes into the black economy.
Okay, well,
I'm
glad you brought up pricing, Duncan, because it's something that we, you know, anecdotally hear in here. And of course, I'm a woman now. I don't dye my hair. I actually just go for the bare, you know, wash and cut. And I usually actually go to like whoever can take me, because it usually is at a stage where my hair is in such bad a state that I have to just go anywhere. And in the last couple of years, like I have been noting 60 to 65 euro for a haircut, right?
Yeah.
Which, like, it seems I'm in there now. Like, I've just straight hair. They don't do anything. I'd say probably 20 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
And it's the same with anyone who gets highlights. You know, they could be in there for maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours. But, like, some salons, you're talking up to 300 euro for, like, you know, blonde highlights or whatnot. And it seems like for some women, it actually nearly is like half a mortgage.
I'm well aware, Cuíva, that if you spend 300 euros in a salon, I'm well aware that you have to earn 600 to pay for that service. Let me just, without moving on to rent rates and service charge, let me tell you where you're getting charged them prices. You're getting charged them prices in Grafton Street or South William Street, or places that have higher rents that are in shopping centres. And, you know, There's not a lot you can do that, but what's happening is they're pushing hairdressing salons out on the second street or the third street now at this stage. So I do take your point on that kind of thing. Every time we have to put up our prices, I sit down and I see, how can I do this? How can I do it? Because I know for an actual fact, I am going to lose customers. And them customers are going to go into the black market as well. And everybody's losing out here. The hairdressers losing out. The young kids that go into hairdressers is losing out. The government are losing out. The money is not going where it should be going.
Okay.
It's just, that's a fact. And I know that. But you look at, if, just getting back to that, if you open up your salon, in, and there's beautiful salons there in St. William Street, some fantastic salons, and I know them all, actually. I mean, it's so long, I know them all. But they're crippled by rent rates and service charge, that, as it is. Then they're crippled by their gas and their electricity, as we are as well. And then after that, you want to put it was 13.5% before, but I think it's a fact, and it's been proven, that when they reduce the VAT on these things that, like hairdressing and other things, when they reduce that, they actually get more, take in more money from that.
Okay.
That's in my opinion, and that's what I hear all the time, and it's only my opinion.
Well, look, Duncan,
you know, like, we have to fight for that, Queen. We have to fight for that.
You're saying there that, you know, those kind of prices would be more in South William Street or in Dublin, but now I know this for a fact, because yeah, all of my friends are, you know, generally Nace area. They're paying those kind of prices, Duncan, around Nace. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, and they're paying it in my salon too, by the way.
Right.
I'll admit to that. They are paying that price. It's €64 for a haircut in our salon. And the reason that it is there is because not only the VAT, it's not even the VAT, it's all the bills are coming up. I haven't got one bill or company that I'm dealing with at the moment that have reduced. It's all gone up. Prices have gone up. Like, where I am, my rent rates and service charge, you're definitely talking about 60,000-70,000 a year for them all, rent, rates and service charge. Like, that's a serious amount of money. You have to pay your employees a proper rate of pay.
Yeah, of course.
Like, they have to earn it. Like, everybody has to get paid. Everybody has to make a few bob out of it.
Yeah.
But you know, like, you think, and I just give you this little thing here. You might think. That a hairdresser, and you see them and you talk about these places in Dublin and they talk about, and you're talking about Nace at the moment. Let me tell you, give you a little scenario here. When you take in a euro in my salon, at this moment in time, 9% of it goes away. Probably 35% of that, more often than not. Absolutely. Not more often than not. 35% of that, our biggest wage bill would be salary. So when you add up the trainees, the front of house and the stylists, you're talking about 60% in wages, probably about 12% in stock. Do you know, I would be very lucky if I get 10 cents in every single euro I take in. And that is the truth. And by the way, I'm a really, really good trader.
Okay.
So what is other people not getting? Now, I know they might take in a couple of thousand a year or whatever, or a week. But it's still, I don't want to bombard you with the facts, but it is the facts.
So if
hairdressers and salons don't make a huge amount of money when it's all paid.
Let's say on the 1st of March, then, this increase goes ahead. Are we looking at, like, you know, how much would you be paying for a haircut then? 70 euro?
Oh, another third will go on to it. Another third will go on to it. I would think so, because, you know something, if they don't, they'll go out of business. And a lot of people will say, do you know something? I'm not going to get another third onto my haircut. I'm not
right.
going to get
But Duncan,
it.
Like, that's the price of a doctor. You know.
Well, you know something? We're there's an argument out there to say that probably we could give better service than a doctor, because they say it's a tonic when you go into a hairdresser and so on. Like, it's not just a luxury.
In fairness, a doctor is a need and a hairdresser is a want. No offence meant to you, well, Duncan, but in reality, like, that is the truth.
Do you believe that that's a want? Like, I've never believed that. I believe that people, I know lots of our customers come in once a week, and do you know something? That's the only time. That's the only thing that they have. They don't go to the pub. They don't. And this is the truth. I'm not getting on here. Do you know something? I don't know how long more I'll be into this in this business. I don't know how long more. But I know of loads and loads of kids that have gone into this business. We spend a fortune on education. Send them to Vida Sassoon's and Sassoon's in London and things like that. We spend a fortune, Quiva. To bring you into the salon. I have a salon in a minute. My rent rates and service charge is 91,000 because of where it is.
Okay.
You know, so it's not an easy, like, it's really, really not an easy thing. And I do well. I do reasonably well. I'm okay. Holding my own. But I know for an actual fact, and a really good friend of mine, by the way, really good friend of mine closed down the salon in a couple of days ago. They just can't do it.
All right, well, Duncan, sorry to cut you off there, but that's all I have time for there now. But that is Duncan Kenna there, owner of Occasions Hair Salon in Naas and Maynooth, and calling there for the VAT rate for hairdressing to be kept at 9% because it is due to go up to 13.5% on the 1st of March. And thanks very much to Duncan. Now, it's almost, many people have heard by now that a record of nearly €170 million was collected in toll charges on the M50 last year. And that's just on the M50. And I'm joined now on the line by Eugene Drennan. He's the president of the Irish Road Haulage Association, and he is going to tell us all about it. Good afternoon, Eugene.
Good afternoon to you.
Eugene, over 344 million in tolls were taken in last year, over 67 million more than the previous year. Excess, isn't it?
Yes, it's quite substantial money, I suppose. One of them, 50, they've clogged up Dublin so much, a lot of the traffic has come out of the city. People would normally cross the city to commute are now coming out onto the M50 and shooting back in. I think that's the trend that has happened there. And seen a big increase on traffic on the M50, plus the economy rising, of course, and things getting back to where they were before. And the amount of money is substantial. It's very large. It's for a piece of infrastructure that has been paid for over and over again. It was paid for originally in the build. Then it was refurbished so many years later, and quite substantial money was paid again. And with the last 2 years, that is done and paid for. So for us in the larger side of the business, in the bigger trucks in the Irish Road Haulage Association, we're saying that must be fed back into either lessening the tolls, or that we as a sector should be singled out, because we were originally put in a category that's very high, the highest category of toll, and this infrastructure is paid for. It's creating a lot of revenue. But the increase that was put on the 1st of January hasn't come on the charge yet, but it's just deferred. It will come shortly.
Okay, yeah, because like we were discussing it in the office here, and we were saying it's a very substantial amount of money, and then surprising that they are going to increase the tolls again, Eugene.
Yes, that plus the fact that we're in the wrong category, we're very high as it is. So we'll take a truck, a larger truck, the articulated trucks, to about 670 per trip, per toll movement. But if you're coming from the south of the country, from Cork or from Limerick, or you're coming in from the west, from Sligo or Mayo, you pay 3 and maybe 4 tolls to Dublin. Okay. So that now would be 26-27 euro one way. And it's a return trip every day. We'll take it to €54. It's too much, far too much. And if we pay, by extension, you may not see this in your region there, but if you're closer to Dublin, and you may not be frequenting or going through the tolls around the country as much as we need to in the supply chain. And but in the totality of toll collected on the supply chain, people who never use that toll, it's passed on to them. You know, so that's where it's seriously unfair. It's already paid for. We're paying for a structure that's an infrastructure that's already paid for, and it's now getting an increase further, which also hikes the VAT. You know, so we're sort of caught in about 2 or 3 ranges of extra charges, which are nothing more than extra taxation now, and we already pay very high taxation on fuel.
I see here that the M4 toll at Kilcock, of course, in Kildare, Eugene, and Kinnegad, 31.8 million was taken in from that toll then last year.
Yeah.
I suppose, how does Ireland compare in terms of other countries and tolls? Are we on par? Are we worse, better?
No, I suppose in the overall, we're less than the main Central European countries of France and Germany.
Okay.
But we are a lot higher than our nearest neighbour and our biggest market, the UK. No tolls. There is one, but it's optional on the M6, and there's one or two underneath the rivers, crossings or very high bridges that may attract some toll. But for the most part, none in the UK. So, you know, we're all been told, well, in the UK there's this, in the UK there's that. They don't toll in the UK. They keep their supply chain going well. In the other countries, they have different arrangements for their tolls, and local hauliers or local supply chain people will be treated differently than just the high cost here.
Okay. Well, what would you like done for yourselves and the Haulage Association, and then maybe the wider public?
Well, for us, to make sure that we wouldn't pass anything on to the wider public, I think we should be recategorised. So if we got into somewhere similar to what coaches or bigger vehicles like us pay, and then within the toll contract, there was an arrangement in that contract or a part of the contract that there would be discount for bulk purchasers and very heavy usage, regular users. And the minister on this occasion allowed the increase because within the contract there was reason for inflation to increase the toll because of inflation. So why do we get one category of the agreement and not the other one, the discount? So I'd like to see something done on that. Now, we have arranged a meeting within the next 2 weeks with TII, who administer this on behalf of the government and oversee it, and we'll see how we go. But far, definitely for the supply chain, the government may be sending a signal to the car users that they want up the cost of car usage, particularly around the 50 or whatever. But there shouldn't be double and triple taxation because the taxes tax the supply chain. That's a step too far and it's too much taxation. So we should have a reduced in category. We don't want it for free. It is an infrastructure that was built. It is one that we do use and we need to use and it helps us. But we want to within the reason of the value that it is to us. And at the moment, it's about double the value.
I wonder, Eugene, like a monthly rate, flat rate, or, you know, a yearly flat rate, something like that. Do you think that could be something that might work for the like yourselves that are using it all the time?
I can see how you would sort of siphon that back down to pro rate to each journey, you know, and it's down to journeys and usage really. If you have flat rate, is that pro rate usage? So I don't think that would really work. And before I go and see negotiations and go into faces with ministers or with any of these sectors, I really don't discuss it until we get to the nuts and bolts. But I can tell you one thing. We do need to see something for the likes of the regular users and for the commercial and the supply chain.
Okay, well, that is Eugene Drennan there, President of the Irish Road Haulage Association, with a record nearly 170 million collected on the M50 tolls last year. Over 344 million in tolls was taken in last year. In total, 67 more than the previous year. And here in Kildare on the M4, the toll at the Kilcock Kinnegad, 31.8 million euro. So very substantial, of course, like Eugene said there, the increases haven't come in yet. So we could see more. We could see a rise next year in this overall tolls and what has been taken in this year. So thank you very much to Eugene Drennan there. We are joined on the line by Breed Brophy, a Thai community arts centre, and she is here to tell us about upcoming celebrations for St. Bridget's Day. Good afternoon, Breed.
Hi, Cleve. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. There's a few things coming up today and tomorrow, Breed. Tell us all about it.
Well, yes, and thanks so much for giving us a little bit of time here. We really appreciate it. Tonight there is a lecture. We're having a series of lectures, and we had in the year gone out, and there's a few more coming up now. And it's Clem Roach, and his lecture is A Thai and the Cambro, the Norman Invasion, and that's at 8 o'clock, and that's a free event.
Okay, and it's just telling about the Norman invasion different parts
and
of history.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Very
so
good.
He's a great historian and has a fantastic interest in this. So he'll have a great lecture for us.
So Clem Roach, that's tonight. I'm in the Thai Community Arts Centre on, and it's at 8 p.m.
8 p.m. That's it.
For people that might not be familiar with Athy, but they might want to go, whereabouts is the
Athy? The Arts Centre in Athy is on the Stradbally Road. You come into Athy if you're coming from Dublin Nace, you come over the Barrow Bridge. If you're coming the other direction, you come over the Canal Bridge. So it's kind of in the centre of the town. You take the sign for Stradbally Portlaoise, and the church and arts centre is just there. We're in the old Methodist church. Well, the Methodist church. It is an old building, but it's the Methodist church. And okay. It's just there on the Stradbally Road.
So you've an event on tomorrow then because of course, St. Bridget's Day. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. Great tradition around St. Bridget, of course, and chatting there with people over the last few weeks, and, you know, great tradition of people going over to have their throats blessed and coming away with a little bottle of oil and a little bit of red flannel on it. And, oh, great talk, you know, about Bridget and the traditions. And, of course, it's coming up to a big celebration of 1500. So, yes, we have an open day. We're going to be open from 10:30 to 4. We have rushes ready to make crosses. We're going to be able to ask people to if people want to make a little burrito for themselves. The tradition of that was on 1st of February, the youngest little person in the family would bring the little doll and would knock on the door and say, you know, is there a welcome for Bridget? On Milfoy, the Bridget's the chock shop, and you know, they'd open the door and say, Turish chock, and they breed. So it was like welcoming spring in the door. So so that's a nice tradition. We have music lined up, poetry, say, from Bridget's poetry and songs, tradition, you know, the folklore and tradition around Bridget, and of course, ritual. And we have a natural world photography. Exhibition on a roll of, you know, a member of the photography group he's a great naturalist and he has fantastic pictures. And there's one thing then with Solace Breed, you know, in Kildare town, they've asked to pause for peas at 1 o'clock or at for 1 minute at 12 o'clock tomorrow. So we're going to do that there. Okay. And pause for peas, and then of course we'll have a cup of tea and chat throughout the, you know, the day. So it will hopefully be a lovely welcome into spring in bulk and all the different traditions that people have around it, and a time to chat and relax.
That sounds like a great, great free event there. And if anyone wants to go along, like Breed said, 10:30 till 4 tomorrow in the Athy Community Arts Centre. And they'll be making St. Bridget's crosses, telling about different traditions that surround St. Bridget, of course, the patron saint here in County Kildare. And if you're into history, which many people are, Clem Roach will be there tonight at 8 o'clock in the Athy Community Arts Centre, speaking about Cambro and the Norman invasion in Athy. That's also a free event. So thanks very much.
Have I time to mention Shane Sullivan? He's featuring the songs of Buddy Holly and Richie Valance on Friday night.
Of course, go ahead there.
That event is on at 8 o'clock Friday night, and tickets will be available at the door. So Buddy Holly fans and Richie Valance, lovely, lovely swing, lovely music. And then on Sunday, we have Sarah McQuaid in concert. And for guitar lovers and guitar players, she's doing a Dagdad-tuned guitar workshop in the afternoon. And then she's doing a concert in the evening. If you go on our website, which is athycommunityartscentre.com, Facebook is Athy Arts, or you can get us on athyarts@gmail.com, or if you're quick, you can take down the number. It's 087-057-6713, and we look forward to welcoming you there. We're back going again, and there's a great energy building up, a committee with great ideas, and so we'll be well on to you now, Peter. Me and other people from the committee will be on to you to tell you about what's coming up for Bridget 1500. We have Beth Murphy is doing an intergenerational workshop. We got funding from the Bridget 15 for that, and that's a planned event coming up over weeks. And so there'll be lots of things.
Okay, well, it sounds like great events on down there, and some free ones, which is great. I have a text in here saying that I thought St. Blaise blessed the throats, but of course, I'm sure St. Bridget could.
St. Blaise did bless the throats, but I suppose it was the tradition of the time around St. Bridget.
Yes.
It was connected, because I think it might be on the 1st or 2nd, but we were going over to Kildare, which was you know, Bridget's kind of home. Yeah, oh, definitely St. Leigh's, yes. He's a great man.
Okay. Many's the time I've got my throat blessed. I don't know. Maybe that's why I'm able to talk for hours
that's
on end on the radio. That's
you can thank St. Leigh's.
Listen, that is Breed Brophy there of the Athy Community Arts Centre telling us all about those upcoming celebrations for St. Bridget. So if you are in the south of the county, or of course, if you want to pop down there, I'm sure they'd be more than happy to have you. I have one quick message here before we go to news. Hi, Cuiva, about the alcohol consumption. To put it into perspective, if you drink only one bottle of wine a week, that is over 36 litres per year. So that is only 12 and change per year, means more people are either teetotal or moderate drinkers, offsetting the medium and heavy drinkers. That is from Michael in Clain. Michael, I'd say it is probably the teetotalers that are offsetting the likes of myself on Hendus. So look, thanks to those people. But well done to everyone who has done Dry January, and if you are going to have a drink tomorrow, I wish you the best in it.